Welcome back to the Garage Hockey Podcast. I'm Felix Sicard, joined as always by my excellent co-hosts, Nick and Joe Berger. Guys, second podcast this week.
We were on a little bit of a schneid. A little bit. Yeah, producing only one a week, but back to two.
Joe, thoughts on being back to two?
I mean, you know, you just got to get on the ice and, you know, you got to keep working on improving and, you know, just getting better for, you know, the next one and, you know, go out there and give it your best.
Well, okay. I think that's a solid response. But guys, on the last podcast, we... And by solid, I meant like completely canned, much like NHL players in locker room interviews. But anyway, on the last podcast, we previewed the Western Conference, a conference that is likely to be highly competitive. And I also want to note our first podcast post World Cup, because the last podcast we had our closing thoughts. We're officially past the World Cup. We don't have to talk about Team Europe, you know, like Team Canada. We can actually talk only NHL hockey, so that's exciting.
Nothing but daylight ahead of us with the NHL season.
Yep, but the Western Conference, we previewed it on the last pod, so if you haven't listened to that yet, check it out. We talked in depth about each team, but guys, this pod, we are talking Eastern Conference. Some might call it the lesser conference.
Some might. Maybe these guys from the West.
Yes. And in good Garage Hockey Podcast tradition for our previews, I have written the list of teams on the big board.
The big board.
The AKA the whiteboard I bought from Target for like $12.
Yes. Was it with you in college?
Yes, it was. It carried me through many, many a statistics final. But anyway, so I have a list of teams on this big board. I've separated them out, and my first grouping, since in the last pod for the Western Conference, we had tiers, or I guess quadrants, quartiles, whatever you want to call them, this time we have three distinct groups. The Eastern Conference is much more of a hodgepodge than the Western Conference is. We're going to start with the lowest group, and we're going to work our way up. This is the impoverished tier. We're going with economic terms.
Economics.
And, ironically, Toronto is in that tier.
Yes, ironically, the richest team in the league. So, in the impoverished tier, to start us off, the Toronto Maple Leafs. Guys, what are your thoughts on the Maple Leafs, and at least their outlook for the 2016-17 season?
So, right now, they're impoverished, but it's looking like it's not going to last that long, you know? They've got Austin Matthews, who's already NHL-ready, thankfully for them. They got the new goalie. They have Frederik Andersen, who
the new goalie.
Yeah, the new to the Toronto area, new to the six.
Yeah.
But clearly an upgrade over Jonathan Bernier. And then they have the coach. They've got Mike Babcock. So it's a rebuilding year. To put it simply, they're still not a playoff team, but they very clearly have a direction now.
Yeah, Joe. Opening thoughts on the Leafs of Toronto?
I mean, yeah, everyone knows that they're in a rebuilding, like we just mentioned. But when you look at their roster, it's a little odd for where they're at, because sort of their cousin in the Western Conference, the Arizona Coyotes.
Yeah.
There you go.
You almost said Phoenix.
I did. I stopped myself.
Shout out to you. Self-control.
Yeah, they're mainly, it's like Shane Doan and Oliver Ekman-Larsson, and then like a bunch of young guys.
Yeah.
You know, and here, you have Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, but you still have guys like they just signed Milan Mihalik.
Yeah.
You know, a veteran. So that, you know, guys like Nazem Kadri, which they're actively trying to get away from.
Yeah.
Because.
Yeah. Maybe.
He's nothing but trouble.
Maybe. But anyway, continue.
So, yeah. You know, they have a mixture of a little bit more experienced guys and what seems sort of like maybe roster fillers for the moment until they can groom, you know, their younger talent and get them NHL ready and ready to contribute. Like, you know, when you see, you know, all of Edmonton's first round picks, you know, hopping into the league, and they really don't have a choice but to play them. But, you know, they're so talented because they're first overall picks that, you know, they can step in anyway. Mm-hmm. But, you know, with Toronto, it's much more of a grooming process. And, you know, they've taken steps forward. And they're not, even though they're in this lower tier of the Eastern Conference that we have so far, they're still, they're not in as in the basement as they were.
Yeah, I think with Toronto, I don't think they're actively trying to be good this season, but there is, like Nick was alluding to, there is a methodology. They signed Mike Babcock to a long-term deal, so clearly they're not. It's not a season-by-season basis. They have a plan. They have a very strong leadership group, Brandon Shanahan pulling all the strings, although Lou Lamoriello is, you know, by title the GM. Brandon Shanahan is really the one calling the shots, president of hockey operations. And then they have WizKid, Kyle Dubas, the assistant GM, sort of the analytics guru. And then obviously Mike Babcock, possibly the best head coach in the NHL. So, you know, the leadership group is very strong with this team.
Their analytics guy, how long has he been with them?
This will be his third year. He is now 29 years old.
Which sort of tracks for when they, you know, started
being smart.
Yeah.
Oh, would you look at that?
Yeah, they kind of led the charge in that.
Analytics helping a team.
Yeah, who would have thought?
Well, who would have thought? Yeah, but really, I think with this team, there is, you know, it's funny. I have them at the bottom because I think they are clearly in a rebuild. But I think they have like legitimately good young talent. Auston Matthews, Mitch Marner, if he makes the team, I think he will. Or you know, and even if he doesn't, will be in the AHL. Probably will be called up at some point. William Nylander was great in the stint he, you know, spent in Toronto at the end of last season. JVR, James Van Riemsdyk, still remains a very good left winger. And then Nazem Kadri, I still think he's very good. And I think at this, the big difference now is that the coaching staff and the management group, I think they actually value him. I think beforehand with the guys they had in the front office, the coach they had, Randy Carlyle, I think there was sort of this notion, and part of this might have been fueled by Toronto media, that, you know, he was just this guy who didn't back check, a skill guy, not good in the room, and you know that's sort of what happens when you're a really good player on a bad team. You sort of get your character gets assassinated in the media, and there might have been something to that. But I think now with the direction of the team, he's going to get appreciated more. He's going to get more looks. So lots of like up front, but defensively, even defensively, there's some hope. But I mean, it's funny because for an analytics driven approach, or at least we know there's an analytics influence at the highest level. The assistant GM. They signed Roman Polak.
Yeah,
again.
They brought him back, and they signed Matt Martin.
Yeah,
to a $2.5 million a year contract. Those were some puzzling moves, but my own gut tells me that they signed those guys because they know someone is going to want them at the trade deadline, and then they're going to pawn them off for more draft picks, because that's sort of been their MO the last couple of years, is we're just going to accumulate assets, and then we're going to pawn them off at the trade deadline to get draft picks or young guns. And I feel like that's actually really smart.
It's really smart.
And especially with, you know, Phil Kessel no longer on the books. Well,
yeah.
They're retaining a little bit of salary.
Yeah, and I mean, and like the wizardry of Brendan Shanahan can be underestimated. They managed to get out of David Clarkson's contract, which nobody thought they could do. So that's already impressive. So I have a lot of faith in this management group. And I feel like even though on the surface those were weird signings, Polak and Martin, I feel like there is sort of a thought process behind that that's more long term.
They definitely have a plan, and they're sticking. They're seeing it through at the moment.
They're trusting the process.
Yeah,
they made a move for Frederik Andersen. They got out of Jonathan Bernier's the Jonathan Bernier files.
Yeah, whatever that was.
Yeah, and you know, like I think Frederik Andersen is a really good goalie. Obviously, writing about the Ducks, I've had a chance to watch every game he's played the last 2 years. But I don't know if he's a guy I want to place all my bets on as my franchise goaltender.
Well, how are they on Sparks?
I mean, is it even relevant? They signed Andersen to a $25 million deal. So
yeah, and then
I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with you with Andersen.
I like him a lot.
He's a very good goaltender. But I don't have him in like the upper echelon.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing. So, I mean, I think he'll be an upgrade for them.
And, like, the thing is, who better could they reasonably attain?
Well...
Reasonably.
They could have kept James Reimer.
You know what?
Arguably, actually, inarguably,
you know what?
The best goalie of, like, the three.
I mean, if you want to come at me with good points, then fine, do that, whatever. Just do you.
All right. So, I think... All right, let's go around the table. What's your prediction, Toronto? Where are they going to land this season?
I don't have them in last place, I don't think, but I have them near it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think, sorry.
Last place in the
Joe,
East.
Go ahead. I don't want to.
I mean,
I'll throw this in after.
Last year, they finished last in the East. You know, I think they can finish third to last.
Yeah, I think there is an upshot for this team. It's just going to be a matter of, you know, how good Anderson plays, because now they've sort of made themselves susceptible to, like, a goalie playing really well and young talent sort of, you know, getting hot.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've seen that with other teams like the Colorado Avalanche of a couple of years ago. That can carry you. I do believe in their potential, but even at its best, I don't think this team is a playoff team.
Yeah, they're still really young and inexperienced, and they're still building around.
And they have no depth.
Yeah,
like, that's the other thing.
At all.
Even with Jake Gardner and Morgan Riley, like, this team has no depth in the blue line.
Yeah,
and very little depth up front. So,
in a few years,
and they're not going to try to be good. If they're too good at the deadline, they're going to trade away the good players. So,
yeah,
like, that's what they did last year.
I mean, JVR stays in Toronto are numbered. Like, I'm not saying he's going to be traded this year, but yeah, when Toronto finally gets good, JVR most likely will not be there.
Yeah, that's a fair point. All right, let's move up the impoverished ladder. And all this Toronto talk, now I'm questioning why I have Columbus, the Columbus Blue Jackets.
I know.
Yeah, I was going to say why.
All right, well, that might have been a slip up on the big board, but hey, the big board isn't perfect.
You spent a lot of time working on it, and I feel like maybe you didn't have Columbus there originally, and then you maybe hedged or second-guessed. But you know what? There's only so much room on the board. I don't know where I'm going with this. Go ahead.
All right. Well, here's the thing with Columbus. As mismanaged as they have been, there remains an interesting stable of talent on this team.
Mm-hmm.
Look no further than Brandon Saad, who is one of the very best left-wingers in the NHL. Boone Jenner, I think. He's no Ryan Johansson, but he's pretty good.
He's actually underrated.
Yeah.
Like, he's kind of the definition of the word underrated.
I like Cam Atkinson's game. Nick Foligno is, I mean, I think he's underrated.
Mm.
I mean, 2 years ago when he scored, what, 35 goals, 40 goals?
Yeah. He went crazy.
Yeah. That was a bit of an aberration. But I think last year when he did not score nearly as many. I think that was also an aberration, split the difference.
But he does have a positive impact on play, which, you know, is important.
And he's the captain, right?
Yes. But, you know, after that, it gets really thin. I don't think Scott Hartnell is all that great anymore. And then, you know, you got guys like Gregory Campbell. So they don't have much depth up front, which I think is just going to cave them in. And I don't trust their coach, John Tortorella, to get the most out of that depth. On the blue line, you know, Ryan Murray and Seth Jones are two, like, just A-grade young defensemen. The problem is they're all alone. Like, you know, you can make an argument for David Savard, but I don't think Jack Johnson will ever fulfill the potential or at least the promise that people thought he had, you know, during the draft. So, look, you know, like, nice pieces in Columbus, but they're still a solid 3 to 4 years away from having a filled-out roster.
Yeah, still incomplete.
Yeah, I think even Toronto has a bit. They currently have a few more pieces than Columbus does.
Oh, easily.
Bobrovsky's going to have a lot of work.
And that's exactly what I was going to say, is when you only have two solid defensemen in front of you.
And thin forward groups.
Yeah, it's going to be a busy year for Bobrovsky, and hopefully we see more of the World Cup Bobrovsky rather than what we saw last year.
But even then, it would still be a tough ask.
It's still Herculean.
Yeah. So. All right. So I think we can solidly say that the Columbus Blue Jackets will be one of the, like, two worst teams in the Eastern Conference. Let's move up into what I have noted on the big board as the middle class of the Eastern Conference. And it's such a big middle class that I actually had to sort of tier it out. Let's start with the lower middle class. Starting with the Carolina Hurricanes. And this might come as a bit of a surprise to some who have been listening to our podcast. I'm particularly high on the Carolina Hurricanes. I like what they did this offseason, but there still is a sense that it just might not be enough to really make a huge leap in the standings. Guys, can you make a case or a case against the Carolina Hurricanes?
I didn't feel amazing about them. I still don't. But I wanted to ask you to fill in the listeners on their coach, Bill Peters, who is probably one of the more underrated coaches. And I'm going to be real. I didn't even really know that much about him. But you kind of sold me.
Yeah. I mean, Bill Peters has proven himself to be a quality NHL head coach in his tenure in Carolina. The Hurricanes have consistently been one of the better puck possession, you know, slash shot attempt differential teams in the NHL, and that's impressive considering the lack of talent they've had on their roster the last couple of years. So if you start plugging in more talent into that group with an already sort of established, you know, system, there could be some really good results there.
And they do have talent because Jeff Skinner rebounded last season. Jordan Staal, I don't think we're going to see 30-goal Jordan Staal ever again from the Pittsburgh Penguin days, but he also had his best season last year in a while.
Like, he can score, and he fills the role of the power forward.
Good power forward.
So, I mean, you know, he definitely makes a difference when he's in the lineup as to when he's not in the lineup, and they tend to, you know, noticeably be missing something.
Yeah.
No, Jeff Skinner's really good.
Jeff Skinner is great. Like,
he's legit good.
Yeah.
And they have a nice stable of young talent. Sebastian Aho, a young Finn who I think we saw play pretty well for the Finnish national team at the World Cup. Elias Lindholm, I think, is actually pretty good. Something about guys with the last name Lindholm.
Yeah, what's going on with that? That should have been my last name. What was I thinking?
They added Toivo Teravainen this offseason from the Chicago Blackhawks. I think that's going to be a move to prove to be sort of a steal. Even Brian Bickell, like, if they have him on the third and fourth line, could be sort of an upgrade for them.
Yeah. And Victor Rask, you know,
And that's without even mentioning Victor Rask, who, like, is, I think, a solid second-line center.
Oh, yeah,
absolutely. And that's without even mentioning Noah Hanifin.
Oh, my boy, Noah Hanifin.
Yeah, and so then moving to the defensive end, Justin Falk, I think he's the stallion back there. Great offensive defenseman. Maybe not as great defensively, but it doesn't really matter when, you know, he's just so good at breaking the puck out and, you know, generating shot attempts. So he's definitely leading the charge there, and I think he's a guy they can rely on night in and night out. And that really matters for a team like this. And then Noah Hanifin, a guy Joe really likes.
Future captain.
Yeah. And then, you know, Hayden Fleury is a young guy who I think they're sort of waiting on to sort of make his, you know, to have his coming out party in the NHL. So, you know, things to like about this roster. But for me, where it really sort of, you know, where the balloon sort of bursts is a net.
Yeah.
Because I think they still believe in Cam Ward. Look, I have a newsflash, Carolina Hurricanes. The last time Cam Ward was good was a decade ago.
The first time he was good.
the first and possibly last time he was good was a decade ago in the Stanley Cup playoffs, where he had that magical run leading the Hurricanes to their one and only Stanley Cup. Look, I get it, loyalty, you know, sort of rewarding the guys who have gotten you there. That's all fine and dandy. The troubling thing for me isn't so much that Cam Ward is bad, because we already know that. It's that Eddie Lack might not be that good either.
We just haven't seen enough of him.
We haven't seen enough, but in Vancouver, before he was traded to Carolina a couple seasons ago, he was good in Vancouver, but he actually wasn't that good in Carolina last year, even limited action.
Yeah.
So that's kind of troubling. We'll see if that can turn around. But
And Carolina wasn't a great team last year. So
they weren't, but they played a style that was favorable to goalies.
Right.
So I feel like if he can't shine there, that's sort of troubling. But we'll see this year. You know, we'll see. So that's why I have them out of the impoverished group, because I think, again, there is a good direction with this team, a quality head coach, skill up front, promise on the blue line, bad goaltenders. But I think the future is bright for the Carolina Hurricanes. And we might start seeing, and we will start seeing glimpses of that this regular season.
Like, there are going to be a couple stretches where, you know, at least one, where they're going to, you know, string together like a six, you know, five, six win streak.
Here come the Hurricanes.
Yeah, and, you know, they're going to be, you know, in the wild card hunt, or, you know, maybe early on in the division chase, but, you know, it's going to fall off after that.
Yeah. Let's climb up the lower middle class. This might be a bit of a surprise. Maybe some people will disagree with me. The New Jersey Devils, I have them one notch above the Carolina Hurricanes, and I think a lot of that is due to the fact that they acquired one Taylor Hall this offseason, trading, quote-unquote, their franchise defenseman Adam Larsson. They acquired one of the very best goal scorers and just sort of generators of offense in the NHL in Taylor Hall, and I feel like he really rounds out their top six, and I feel like rounding out might be selling it a bit short. Like, they already have Mike Camilleri. Adam Henrique is a quality forward. Kyle Palmieri scored 30 goals last year. And even on the third line, Pavel Zacha is a guy who's shown a lot of promise in his junior career. So, you know, I think there is an upward trajectory for these New Jersey Devils, at least up front.
There is. And if Bo Bennett can stay healthy and be the guy that he's been projected to be for the past several years, then that makes their forward group even deeper, and then it's not all on Adam Henrique and Taylor Hall. It just gives them more offensive firepower.
A huge problem they've had, though, the past few years is they've been waiting for Travis Zajac to really come into his own, because he's a talented player with, you know, he was projected to have a high ceiling and then never really did anything. You know, he's shown flashes here and there of what he could do, but he never seems to really, lack of a better term, get into the rhythm of things. Like, it doesn't seem like he's gelling at the NHL level.
I think he might be more, I think he's maybe miscast. I think he might be more of a third line center kind of player, but in New Jersey, even over the last several years, they just haven't had that much talent to work with. Yeah, so guys are maybe not slotted in the right position.
Yeah, like fantasy wise, you know, taking the guys who are on their first line and their first power play unit has, you know, worked out great, but that's because they don't really have much behind them, and they have to play they take a lot of the offensive zone draws, and they're playing a lot on the power play, so they just naturally they're going to be scoring a bulk of the main chunk of points.
Yeah, it's the Michael Bodker effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? Don't hurt my feelings.
Yeah, but like, and so obviously, and don't forget Devontae Smith-Pelly.
Your boy.
Who had that magical run at the end of last season. I severely doubt that he'll be able to repeat that. But as far as fourth line wingers go, he's one of the better ones. So good for them. Defensively, I just feel like this is sort of where it falls apart for the New Jersey Devils. I think Andy Green is sort of better than what people give him credit for. Damon Severson is also not bad. But then you got guys like Kyle Quincy, who like somehow keeps finding jobs in the NHL. Ben Lovejoy. Just sort of a very underwhelming / unimpressive blue line.
Yeah, as well as Ben Lovejoy played in the playoffs, specifically in the final. It's not something to get too excited about. And like you said, outside of Andy Green and that really great month or whatever that Severson had 1 or 2 years ago, you know, they've got holes on the back end.
What was how'd Schlemko get away from them? Was he a free agent or did they trade?
Free agency.
Yeah. Okay, so they lost Schlemko to free agency and then they trade away Larson. Yeah. So right now, those two guys will look really good on their defense right now. Their defense still wouldn't look phenomenal. It would look somewhat serviceable.
Right.
Yeah, but anyway, like I just feel like focusing on this team's defense would sort of be taking away from their strengths, which I think are really sort of impressive. Look, Corey Schneider is one of the best goalies in the NHL, and I feel like he's going to win them games. He has been winning them games that they shouldn't be winning, and then you factor in the added firepower up front of Taylor Hall, and I think this team will hang around. Like, it's not that outlandish to think that they're going to at least, you know, win a few games. And that's the thing with the Eastern Conference, is that there's not much separating this middle class.
Yeah, there's going to be, I can already see it now, going into the last week of the season or whatever, and there's going to be a big cluster of teams that are like 4 points apart, and they're all going to be vying for those seventh and eighth spots, and I can see New Jersey being involved in that.
Yeah. All right. So look, Devils, a nice starting point. But by the time they're good again, they might have already wasted the primes of Hall and Schneider.
Unfortunately.
They're not making the playoffs. Sorry.
Still work to do.
All right. Let's move up the lower middle class. And again, this one might be a little surprising. The Buffalo Sabres. A team that is perennially, it seems in the last few years, on its way back to relevancy. And I think this might be the year that we finally start seeing sort of daylight for this team. I think that the fact that they now have a franchise centerpiece in Jack Eichel is huge for them. Ryan O'Reilly continues to be a very underrated center. I think he's one of the very best in the NHL. Tyler Ennis, Sam Reinhart might turn out to be pretty good. They added Kyle Okposo in the offseason. Zemgus Girgensons is a quality third-line center. Even Johan Larsson is a player I really like. So I think that you have a pretty fleshed-out forward group. To me, where it sort of falls apart once again, and this is sort of the story of a lot of teams in the Eastern Conference, is the blue line. I didn't really understand why they traded for Dmitry Kulikov. I think that he's a vastly overrated defenseman. Rasmus Ristolainen is a guy they drafted. He's a right shooting defenseman, but I think that as good as he is, he, again, might be a little overrated because of the homegrown factor. Zach Bogosian is a guy I like, but it sort of falls apart after that. I mean, Josh George is getting up there in the years, and then Cody Franson.
He's
a nice player.
Cody Franson had good years in Toronto when... That's an accomplishment because it was hard to have a good season in Toronto,
especially as a defenseman.
Yeah, so where things fell apart with him was when he went to Nashville and Peter Laviolette decided that he didn't like him.
Yeah,
but
to me, where it's sort of gonna play out for the Buffalo Sabres is a net, because they're really sort of placing all their bets on Robin Leonard, and we've seen flashes of potential for Robin Leonard, but I think this season will be telling, because now he has a real team in front of him. I know there are questions on the blue line, but the way that forward group looks, and say what you will about their blue line, but it's not terrible anymore.
Right.
So it's like, all right, let's see it, Robin Leonard.
And they have Dan Bylsma.
They
have a good coach.
Who's a quality head coach.
But Robin Leonard seems to be the president of his fan club.
Yes.
Just reading quotes from him.
He's kind of insane also.
Yeah. So he hasn't, like you said, he's shown flashes. He's a big goaltender, prototypical, but he just hasn't proven it yet. So this is a big year for him, and he's going to have to stay healthy.
Yeah.
Because the last year was pretty much lost.
Let's not forget Evander Kane.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where
it's very questionable where he'll end up playing this season.
Yeah, you know, he's probably not going to finish with Buffalo, and that could very well just mean he's going to be injured.
Yeah.
Like, severely.
But I think for the first time in quite a few years, this is the first year where I think Buffalo has a legit chance at making the playoffs. Just sort of the way the East is looking, I think that the Buffalo Sabres are going to matter this year. But even at their best, I don't think this is a team that can, reasonably win, two or three rounds in the playoffs.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They still have a very young team overall. They have some, like you talked about, Georges and guys like that. They have veterans. But it's still a team whose core players are young and still developing.
Yeah. All right. So let's climb up. I think we're officially out of the lower middle class.
Yeah, we are.
Let's move ahead to the Philadelphia Flyers, a team that took the NHL by storm in the last few weeks of the regular season in 2015-16. I think it was really cool to see a guy like Shane Gostisbehere, a relative unknown, sort of come out of nowhere and, make his mark on the NHL. It was really cool to see. On the blue, I'm going to start with the blue on here. I know we always start with the forwards, but I feel like they have things to like on the back, and I think Mark Streit didn't look terrible in the World Cup playing for Team Europe. Ivan Provorov is a guy who could potentially break out. I think Michael Delzato is a bit underrated, as is Radko Gudas. And then obviously you have Shane Gostisbehere, who's clearly their best defenseman. So I'm not going to call this an elite blue line by any stretch, but I think that it's respectable. It can get the job done.
And it's the best blue line that we've talked about so far, easily.
Yes. Yes.
Like, there's actually, you look there, you can actually get sort of excited.
There's more than, like, three NHL players
on
this blue line. Yeah. So I think that they get a passing grade there, but you have to love their top six forwards. Claude Giroux, first and foremost, just a stud goal scorer, playmaker. I mean, could be the best player in a lot of teams. Wayne Simmonds still probably doesn't get enough credit for how good he actually is on the power play. And that's something that we should briefly mention, is that Philadelphia's power play is actually one of the better power plays in the NHL, because they have defined roles. Like, everyone on that power play knows what to do, and I think that's what really matters. I think that's what makes the Washington Capitals, not to get too far ahead, that's what gets them so much success, is that everyone sort of knows what they have to do.
Something I like about their power play is, like you said, everyone has defined roles, but they're also interchangeable on the power play. Like, Giroux and Voracek, you interchange there, and then Shen and Simmonds, they can rotate in and out of that slot, and bow for the puck behind the net, and so they're kind of hard to keep track of, because they can constantly be moving and work well in anywhere in the offensive zone.
And that's the thing too, is that people think of Wayne Simmonds as a net front present,
like a grinder.
But
he's much more than that.
He's really talented. Like, he's just a skilled player. So you have talent all throughout that lineup. All throughout that power play specifically. So you're not just relying on Giroux or Voracek to create plays. You can actually have the puck on anyone's stick out there and something can happen.
Yeah, and like the name is escaping me right now, but there was a really great analytics project this past season, a guy tracking every team's or a few teams' power plays around the league and sort of just tracking how efficient they were, tracking all the micro stats, just really analyzing each power play. And one that really stood out to him was Philadelphia, and he sort of took notes on like who, like what makes a good power play. And part of that, like we've been saying for the past few minutes, is like defined roles and sort of unpredictability. And that's something that Philadelphia excels at, and especially when you factor in Shane Gostisbehere, who can just sort of do anything from that blue line. So that's going to be the strength of this team. And I think, you know, in net, they're sort of set with, you know, either Steve Mason or Michael Neuwirth, they're going to get quality goaltending. So, like, I think this team has... I think they have definitely playoff potential. I mean, they made it last year. I don't think it's out of the question they make it again. But their depth at forward isn't... You can't even really call it average, I think. Yeah. I like that they added Dale Weiss. I think he's sort of tailor-made for the Philadelphia Flyers.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so that's going to be interesting, and that's going to... That's going to make the Pittsburgh-Philadelphia rivalry all the more entertaining.
Yeah. Oh, I can see it now.
But yeah, I got love for the Flyers. I think it's going to be an interesting season for them. And I hope so, because Claude Giroux is such a talent. It would be a waste to see him sort of not be in the playoff picture.
So they had 96 points last year. What are we putting them at this year?
I would say just about the same.
That sounds about right.
I was thinking like 92. Like I'll, yeah. 96, even though it's... The two win difference.
They sort of. I mean, I'm waiting to see a full season of Gostisbehere.
Yeah, that's going to be fair.
That's going to be really sort of the defining characteristic of this team. But and, yeah, I'm confident, and I like their coach. I think Hakstol is a good coach.
Who starts for them?
In goal.
I think we're going to see Steve Mason.
I think so too, but I would still start Neuwirth.
Yeah, I would too.
I know I've said it before.
I think they're fine either way. I don't think it matters a ton, but yeah. I think Mason is the better goaltender.
And it's just, you know, really like the past 5 years, maybe even longer. Philly, the goaltending position in Philly has just been a carousel. Like,
it has been, but I think for the first time there is a sense, a fragment of stability. We're long past the Ilya Bryzgalov days.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Because right. He's what, hunting bears or whatever.
So
I do want to say also, just real briefly, is that there is reason to feel really good because, like you guys mentioned earlier...
Matt Reed?
No. You know what? Just because he was good on my fantasy team for, like, two games, man, never forget, apparently, hashtag. You guys mentioned earlier, a full season of Gostisbehere is going to be huge for them. And then Jake Voracek had a down year last year.
Oh, absolutely.
Even though he was... good on the power play, still very productive. I think he only scored 11 goals.
Yeah, he had a weird year.
So he's, I mean, a player that talented, he's going to play better.
Didn't he only have like 2 goals through the first 2 months or something?
Something bizarre.
Yeah, his shooting percentage, because he also had one of the higher shot volumes for someone that hadn't scored.
Yeah.
So.
A la Getzlaff. But yeah, exactly. I think the Flyers have a real shot at the playoffs, but I just think it's up in the air considering the teams we're about to mention.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on up. The Boston Bruins.
The Boston Bruins.
That's my shot at a Boston accent. I tried not to overdo it.
You get a passing grade.
I got a passing grade. Cool. I actually interviewed Jack Edwards once.
You did.
I'm sorry.
It was actually interesting. He's way different when he's not like, you know, possibly drunk in the broadcasting booth.
We're starting rumors right now.
Anyway. before we lose all our Boston audience,
I wouldn't know. I usually when Boston is on, I usually turn on mute.
Mute.
All right. Well. The Boston Bruins are a team that's had some buzz this offseason. You could argue their GM is a little buzzed at times, Don Sweeney. they sought out the services of Zach Rinaldo, who like probably wouldn't be that good in the AHL.
So Guinness and Hennessy.
Yeah. But let's talk about the good sides of this Boston Bruins team. First and foremost, we have to mention Patrice Bergeron, a stud. Just like... He's the GOAT.
He's still great.
Like I think the two best Boston Bruins, it's Bobby Orr and then Patrice Bergeron. I'm just saying it.
I mean, there is Espo.
Okay, so he's the third best. Yeah. Well, anyway, all right.
Cam Neely?
Nah, I'd put Bergeron ahead of him.
Ray Bourque?
I mean, dude, Bergeron's really good.
He's great.
Yeah, like he's so good in every facet of the game. That's why, and he's been good for so long. And don't forget, he won a Stanley Cup with broken ribs and a punctured lung.
That's true.
And one leg and one shoulder.
He was on death's doorstep.
All right.
But anyway.
Like, he must have been heavily medicated.
Oh, yeah. But anyway, a lot of Bergeron love, very warranted. But there's a lot to like about this forward group. Brad Marchand, who had a breakout, should we call it breakout? A breakout World Cup tournament. I think that although he had a great season last year, I think a bigger audience saw what he can actually do.
It was like his...
That doesn't involve like slew footing and just sort of weird...
Jabbing guys in the face-off circle.
Trashy stuff.
Yeah, it was his post-emptive breakout to his first breakout, which was scoring 37 goals last year.
Yeah, they made some weird moves, adding David Backes, signing him to, I believe, close to $5 million for like 4 years.
Yeah, something like that.
$5 million per season.
He has a $6 million cap hit for 5 years.
Oh.
And it was, I have to say, it was hilarious when that signing first went down because you see like Darren Drager and Bob McKenzie tweeting, Boston Bruins signed David Backes.
The GOATs.
At first, they thought it was, you know, like $5-6 million for 1 year. And they're like, okay, he fits in Boston. That's not bad. And then it was like, no, wait a minute. For 5 years, this is awful.
Yeah. No, it's not a good contract. But look, I mean, for the time being, aka the next like 8 months, he can still be serviceable. And I think that if you look at the rest of this forward group, Ryan Spooner, I think, is going to take another step forward this year. David Krejci is like secretly, like still a very good playmaker in the NHL.
Yeah, I mean,
as long as he's healthy.
The past couple of seasons for David Krejci, when he has been on the ice, he's been right around point per game. It's just he's injured a whole lot.
My hip.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then David Pastrnak, who again, a young, promising forward, much like Ryan Spooner, although I think Pastrnak is better. Lot of potential up front. And then Matt Beleski, look, I think Matt Beleski got a bit overrated a couple of years ago, but if he's on your third line, like, you could do worse. He has a nice scoring touch. Jimmy Hayes, we're still waiting to see something from him. They signed Dominic Moore. That could be interesting.
I mean, you could do so much worse.
Oh, easily.
He's actually a skilled, like, he's got game, girl. He's got game.
Yeah, and then on the blue line, that's where I'm sort of, the question marks start to arise for me. I think Zdeno Chara is clearly on a downward trend. Kevin Miller, like, I mean, he might be okay. Torrey Krug is easily their best blue liner. Adam McQuaid, Joe Morrow, John Michael Lyles. They actually signed Christian Ehrhoff to a PTO, professional tryout.
So he might have a chance of making that.
Yeah, and I think he will make it. And, like, he's actually still pretty good. Yeah. So I think, you know, at worst, this blue line is okay. You know, yeah. I think there's still a notch above the teams we've described.
They do need someone like Ehrhoff, though, because it can't just be Krug and Chara and kind of getting closer to the point of the corpse of Chara.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, like, you know, I don't love that blue line, but I still think it's decent.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then in net, Tuukka Rask. Like, I still think he has a lot of game left. So. The Boston Bruins, don't be surprised if they're in the playoff picture to potentially winning a round.
Yeah,
I don't think it's out of the question.
Yeah, they'll be right there in the mix.
A team that I have right next to the Bruins, because I couldn't convince myself to put one over the other, the Ottawa Senators, who were, I think, heavily discussed this offseason, and rightfully so. They perhaps made the biggest coaching signing in Guy Boucher, a guy who was pretty much in every coaching rumor for like 12 months. I think that's going to be a big move for them. They finally have a very good head coach. They've had such bad coaches the last couple of years.
Yeah, outside of the one really good year of
Paul McClain. Yeah.
But Guy Boucher was so good with Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
It was just a matter of time before he got another crack at the NHL. So it's great timing for Ottawa, I think, because they have so many good, young, talented players. Guys like Carlson that are entering their prime. It's looking up for Ottawa.
I have to laugh every time I think about, you know, Guy Boucher and coaching. He is a good coach, but the part I have to laugh at is that game a few years ago, Philly against Tampa, right?
Right.
Where he's coaching Tampa, and they're running like this neutral zone trap. Like, it was ridiculous.
It was like a 1-4 or whatever.
Yeah,
or something like that.
It was like a 1-3-1.
Yeah,
and then Philly just refused to move the puck.
Yeah,
and the refs are yelling at the players, "Let's go, let's play a game."
They were rattled.
Yeah, and
it actually changed the game.
Yeah,
yeah, but yeah. So like, I don't know if we're gonna see that Guy Boucher, but what I love the most about Guy Boucher is that he believes in skill, which like shouldn't be rare in the NHL, but for whatever reason it tends to be. He said all the right things about Mike Hoffman. He's really seems to believe that he can be a leader on this team, and I think he's going to be. I mean, he scored 30 goals last year. And then you look at the rest of their forward group with Kyle Turris, Mark Stone, who like I think is very underrated, Derek Brassard. I mean, I got to say, I think the more I've thought about it, trading Derek Brassard for Mika Zibanejad, or trading Mika Zibanejad for Derek Brassard, is going to turn out to be a pretty bad move for the Senators. But in the next like 8 months, it won't be that bad because I think Brassard still has a lot of game left. And then Bobby Ryan. So like you look at that top six, and there's a lot of skill, a lot of speed.
Yeah,
they are missing a piece though right now with Clark MacArthur being out with concussion.
Yeah, that's tragic, by the way.
Yeah, what happened to the guy who hit him? Did they send him down right away or just cut him altogether?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't particularly care.
In practice, I can't remember the guy's name.
By the way, Clark MacArthur, for those who don't know, like missed almost all of last year with a concussion. Finally makes it back, and then in practice,
his own guy, a minor leaguer, came in and cheap shot at him.
Yeah,
and
just, puck was far away.
Yeah, and his own teammate.
Yeah,
and
a guy who's trying to make the team,
and he's he brought his concussion back.
Yeah,
and then there was even a fight and.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Bobby Ryan went right after
him. A couple guys went after
him. Good.
Bobby Ryan, who can't spell intense, by the way. Yeah.
Bobby Ryan, I think CC also went after him.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's tragic, but even with the loss of MacArthur, who knows when he'll be back, they still have a nice forwards. A lot of skill, a lot of goal scoring ability. That power play is going to be nice. But, you know, on the back end, Erik Karlsson.
Yeah.
I think the best defenseman in the NHL.
The fourth forward.
Yeah, the fourth forward, him and Mark Methot have made a pretty good pairing. There's a lot of criticism around Methot, but I think he's good enough to hang around Karlsson. Dion Phaneuf, we'll see what they get out of him this year. Cody Ceci is actually not that bad. The third pairing is pretty brutal, but that's okay. Weidman and Borowiecki.
Oh, man.
But anyway.
This is hard.
Yeah.
Tongue twisters are hard, y'all.
Yeah, but like, there's a lot to like about this team. And then in net, you know, Craig Anderson,
the Hamburglar,
put that all with a good coach, and I think that like you have a legit shot at the playoffs with this team.
Yeah,
what they do last year with the goaltending?
Anderson was hurt. Oh, like, so they had a lot of injuries.
Do you think they're going to have a tandem between him and Hammond this year? Is it Anderson's job?
Anderson is the guy.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, so if you had to put your money on the line right now, do the Ottawa Senators make the playoffs?
I'll say yes.
Yeah, I don't think it's out of the question. I think so.
Yeah, I think they do.
Yeah, don't be surprised. All right, let's move up. So I think now we're in the upper middle class. We finally made it to teams who I think are solidly good, or at least you know. I think we know they're going to be in the playoff picture.
Right,
like it's not really in question. At all, starting with the New York Islanders, the Brooklyn Islanders. I mean, when you talk New York Islanders, you have to mention first and foremost John Tavares, their franchise player, their first overall pick in 2009.
He was Dr. Dangles at the World Cup.
Yeah, he was amazing, and they made some nice pickups this offseason. I really like that they added P.A. Parenteau on a cheap deal. I thought they overpaid for Andrew Ladd. And I don't know how much better he is than Kalak Poso, who they let go of. But
they play different games.
They play different games, but I think, like, you know, the net score, I don't know how much different it is. And then, you know, to round out the forwards, Anders Lee, Ryan Strom, Josh Bailey, Brock Nelson. A lot of talent there, you know, and some grittiness, too. But good grittiness. So I think they're certainly talented up front. I think that much is certain. On the back end, though, I might like their defensemen better than I like their forwards, as much as I like John Tavares. Nick Leddy, Travis Hamonic, Calvin DeHaan is pretty good. Johnny Boychuk, Thomas Hickey. Like, this is a nice puck-moving blue line.
Yeah. And Johnny Boychuk really flourished more offensively after he went from Boston to New York. So he really rounds out that D-core nicely. And then Nick Leddy, I think, is still underrated.
Yeah, and they gave a tryout to Dennis Seidenberg. So
yeah,
we'll see what that ends up. And then Jaro Halak and Thomas Greissen net. So, you know, Halak looked great in the World Cup. But, you know, if one falters, I think that they have a good amount of confidence in either guy.
Yeah, Thomas Greiss had a really good year last year. So they're pretty much set in goal. They can ride the hot hand. If one goes cold, they've got the other one. So they're kind of set.
But I think the storyline this season is going to be the fact that I think Jack Capuano is solidly on the hot seat.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. I think he's had a few chances at it now. He's had a few runs. But if they're struggling or like middling around 500 come the All-Star break or even a month into the season, I think you could see a coaching change with the Islanders.
Let the Ralph Kruger rumors begin. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's certainly one candidate, although it sounds like he's like solidly in, like he actually works for a professional soccer team.
It sounds like...
like that's his thing.
Yeah, it sounds like he's pretty committed to whatever he's doing right now, which is totally respectable.
It seemed like what he wanted was if a big gig came along, like if he had a chance to coach someone like Eichel or McDavid, you know, if he got a chance to work with players like that, but mainly it was if, you know, someone on a big team got fired. That seemed like the only reason why he'd go to the NHL.
Yeah, and so for Jack Capuano, I think even if they made the playoffs, I think a first-round exit would probably be the end of his tenure.
It's kind of like conference final, perhaps even Stanley Cup final or bust for him to like last another season.
Because it's been a lot of making it to the first round or whatever, but it's like, okay, we need to take the next step. So if it has to happen at some point. So if it doesn't this season, I think it's going to be like, okay, we've gone in with this good team. You've had your chances and it's just not working. They're going to feel forced to go in a different direction.
Yeah. I mean, I think I can say with a good degree of confidence that the Islanders will make the playoffs.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. That I'm keeping it 100 on that. They will make the playoffs. 100 emoji.
Should we move on to your boys?
Yeah. Let's talk about the Montreal Canadiens, a team that I think you can only describe their offseason as tumultuous, trading their perhaps even their best player, at least definitely their best skater in PK Subban, to the Nashville Predators for Shea Weber. A trade that was, well, not for Shea Weber itself, but it was rumored at the draft that they might trade Subban, and then Marc Bergevin promptly said, "I'm not shopping PK Subban." And maybe we should have read between the lines, because surely enough, a week later, we check our Twitter timelines and it says PK Subban has been traded to the Nashville Predators.
It was a dark day in the life of Felix J. Sicard.
I felt bad that day. I felt betrayed. I wanted to burn my jersey. I was at jersey burning level.
Well, I mean, that's a high level because for those that maybe don't know, Felix's fandom of the Montreal Canadiens, I mean, it's his life.
I roll deep.
It's his blood. It rolls deep. Like, it's real.
Yeah. It sucked. It still sucks. It's going to linger for a while. But all that being said, I still think there is room for optimism with these Canadiens.
Like signing Andrew Shaw.
Trading for Andrew Shaw.
Whatever.
Yeah.
He shouldn't be there.
Look, that's the move they made before trading Subban. That's like, I was already rolling my eyes at that one because they traded Lars Eller to the Washington Capitals and then traded the picks they got from that to the Blackhawks to get Shaw. Again, like a super reactive, sensitive move because they thought they didn't have enough grit or character last season. Whatever. They didn't have Carey Price and they had a bad coach. That's what happened last season.
They have a bad coach.
They still have, and that's the funny thing. So at the darkest point of last season for the Canadiens, when they were on a historic losing streak,
after being on a historic start,
they started 9-0.
Like it was historic even for the Canadiens,
a team that has been in the NHL for over 100 years. Look, Marc Bergevin referred to, well, first he had the media congregate press conference. And he referred to Michel Therrien as a foxhole guy.
I don't know what that means.
A guy that's sort of like you'd go to war with. That, like, okay, you're going to bunker in the foxhole. look, I have to say that up to that point, I sort of liked Mark Bergevin, but then, what's the old saying? Like, the crazies have taken over the madhouse or something like that.
It's turned into Arkham Asylum.
Yeah, look.
He's lived long enough to see himself become the villain.
It was just baffling that in a city like Montreal, which there is probably the highest pressure of any team in the league to succeed, that you would actually go to bat for a coach who clearly is the problem, who is overseeing a historic collapse, to actually show confidence in that guy. And I think, to a fault, Mark Bergevin wants to be the guy who isn't overreacting. But what he doesn't realize is he's overreacting the wrong way. He just doesn't realize it.
Right. He's like double reverse overreacting.
It was an interesting parallel because in the Western Conference, the Ducks got off to an awful start.
Yeah.
And, you know, people were calling for, you know, time for a coaching change. And, you know, Murray was like, no, we're riding this out.
Let's see what happens. Yeah.
And he had a great coach that turned the team around and got them into the playoffs and was the best team after Christmas, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, in Montreal, you have we're going to ride this one out, but you have an awful coach, and they were still the worst team.
Yeah, and the most troubling thing with Michel Therrien is I feel like he, you know, it's funny because they always talk about character. I feel like he himself has character issues. I feel like he doesn't have any problem throwing his best players under the bus to the media. And that's troubling to me.
Yeah, like I understand, you know, maybe bumping heads with PK Subban because PK Subban has a big personality.
Yeah,
I like his personality, but it is big.
Yeah.
So if you know you're a coach and you also have personality, then maybe you don't.
If you have an ego.
Yeah, if you have an ego, you don't see eye to eye. But Subban's upside, and
it makes it all worth it.
Yeah, like his overall personality, there is a way to work it in, even if you're a little lackluster about...
I just think Subban is so good that when he does make mistakes, it's sort of so... it's just so in the limelight that you sort of get desensitized to all the great things he does. You don't realize how good you have it. So the game where he made that critical turnover, he, like, quote-unquote, made the wrong play, led to a turnover, led to an on-man break. I think it was against the Avalanche, I'm not sure.
Yeah, and then they scored. Just lost an edge, that was all.
Yeah, and he just slipped at the blue line and fell. Like, it could happen to anyone. And after the game, Therrien, without saying Subban's actual name, but we all knew what he was referring to, referred to Subban's play as selfish, which I think is, I mean, it's just crap.
Trying to make a play in overtime and losing your edge, which is just bad luck.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And you look at another guy. The reason why Subban gets a lot of flack is because he's a great talent, and when he screws up, obviously, you know, his screw-ups are big. Because
as a defenseman, if you screw up, everyone sees it. Yeah. It's kind of like when you're a goalie.
And the puck is always on his stick because the offense rightfully should be running through him.
Yeah.
And it was the same thing with Joe Thornton. You forget about all the great passes that Joe Thornton makes when he turns it over because you know, he's cut back on his turnovers quite a bit, but he's always making passes, and it's just...
Some of them are bound to hit another player's stick.
Yeah, it's going to happen. When the puck's on your tape that much.
So, for all the doom and gloom and rain clouds over Felix's head and Montreal, there is still some reason for optimism.
Yeah.
We saw, we were talking before we began the recording about the Canadiens lineup for the preseason game today. And even though not having Subban there on the back end sucks, they put together a pretty good-looking core of defensemen.
Yeah.
Some pairs that we actually like a lot.
Yeah, like they're going to trust Nathan Beaulieu to pair up with Shea Weber, which I think is a smart play because Weber needs a puck mover next to him to, you know, sort of shelter the fact that he's not so great at a lot of things. And then on the second pairing, Jeff Petrie with Andrei Markov, I think that's a smart move. Andrei Markov is a heady player, makes a lot of great plays, but has lost a lot of speed in the last 3 years. So to put a guy like Jeff Petrie next to him, I think is sort of a good hedge. And then on the third pairing, you have Alexei Yemelin with the 9th overall pick this past draft, Mikhail Sergachev. I think that's an interesting move. And the fact that today they sent down Mark Barberio, put him on waivers, a guy that they re-signed this offseason to NHL money on a one-way deal. The fact that they sent him down, I think that might indicate that Sergachev might have made the team.
Yeah, and we're only about a week away, so rosters are dwindling down a lot, yeah. And the guys that are going to be making the team are the ones that are, for the most part, still here.
Because Greg Patterin, another defenseman who's sort of vying for that sort of third-pairing role, I think he's looked really good, but I just think for whatever reason they don't have a lot of faith in him. And then they signed Zach Redmond, another depth defenseman, who I think, you know, it could be okay. But Sergachev to be placed in that lineup, I think you're going to give him a shot. And that's exciting because there's a lot of people saying that he has a lot of game. He has a nice offensive upside. And I think, why not give him a chance, at least to start? Like, let's see what he has. And if it doesn't work out, send him down or whatever. You know, yeah. It doesn't matter.
You know, they have Carey Price back there to bail out mistakes.
So. And I think this is the biggest thing for the Canadians this season will be the return of Carey Price. Last season, under this coaching staff, we saw what happens when they lose the best goaltender in the world, Carey Price. That won't be the case this season, so long as he stays healthy. And should he return to form, or at least close to what he was at the MVP level of 14-15, the Canadians are going to matter, just because he's going to keep them in games that they probably shouldn't be, you know, competing in. And let's not overlook the fact that they hired Kirk Muller, who was a beloved assistant coach back when they had Guy Carboneau. He's going to be in charge of the power play. And don't overlook the fact that they named him an associate coach, not an assistant coach.
Yeah. So
so the writing might be on the wall for Therrien.
I think Kirk Muller is sort of next in line if things don't work out. And the sad thing is, looking at the promise in the blue line, Carey Price being back, like, they're probably going to be good enough where Therrien will be fired right away. But anyway, up front, let's talk about their forwards, because I think this is sort of, again, another area where they can shine. Alex Galchenyuk, you know, one of probably the most misused forwards in the NHL. I think he was 7th in ice time on the team last year.
On the team?
Which is ridiculous.
That's ludicrous.
Still managed to put up 30 goals. This year, he's already slated as the number one center, and I think he's going to stay there for good. The debate throughout his entire career has been, when is he shifting to center? He's there. He's proven that he's best when he's at center. He has the full sheet of ice at his disposal. He's going to be a great first-line center. And then you have Max Pacioretty and Brendan Gallagher flanking him. I mean, two surefire first-liners. So that first line,
it's going to be explosive.
It's already been explosive. We're just going to see more of it, hopefully.
Yeah. And that's just the right move with Galchenyuk, because he's so good on his edges, really creative with the puck.
Oh, yeah.
So just giving him more ice to work with, and then putting him with a sniper like Pacioretty and a good goal scorer like Brendan Gallagher, that's just, it's a no-brainer.
And then they brought in Alex Radulov, who I think will have a good season.
We'll see.
He's been really good in the KHL. I'm willing to say he's going to score at least 20 goals. I think he's going to be able to chime that in. And it might not be because of efficiency, but I think he's just going to get the opportunity. Look, they signed him to a 5.75 one-year deal.
The Thomas Vanek effect.
He's better than Thomas Vanek. I mean, you would agree with that.
No, I would agree with that. Yeah. But.
And then David Desharnais will most likely be the third-line center, and I think that's a role he's suited for. So look, the Canadians, I'm pretty high on them, even though they've done everything they can to rip my heart out and step all over it this summer. I'm high on the fact that they can make the playoffs.
Yeah, and you know,
and who knows from there.
And bottom line, Carey Price always gives them a chance.
Yeah,
and that's just how good he is. And like you said, they have good players still. Like, we focus on what they've lost this offseason, and maybe even some of what they've gained in comparison, because it pales. But they still have a good team. We just rattled off a bunch of names that a lot of teams would like to have.
Until they get rid of Therrien, I will remain skeptical.
Well, that's
fair.
The interesting thing, though, is going to be which Michel Therrien shows up this season. The one that we've seen for the large part of his tenure. In the beginning part of last season, they were one of the best puck possession teams in the NHL, and that was something that had consistently been a knock against them in previous seasons. But as the injuries started to mount, Carey Price, Brendan Gallagher, they sort of got back to their old ways. They didn't trust sort of what was getting them that early season success. We'll see if they can go back to that. Because if they can just break even to, you know, sort of dominate the shot attempt battle, I think that this could be a really good team.
I think I know the answer to this, but did they change their style or their system much to cope with the loss of Carey Price?
Well, what they've been known to do, which is probably going to continue, even when they were doing this, is they love to lob the puck out of their defensive end and sort of have, and the Pittsburgh Penguins do this also, and they sort of depend on their forwards to win races for it in the neutral zone.
Okay.
So it's not a very sustainable way of exiting the zone, but they managed to have some success with it in the early part of the season.
That's kind of what I had in mind when we were previewing the World Cup and talking about the Weber-Vlasic pair for Canada. And I was saying, you know, I think they'll get out of the zone. It might not be with control, but they're going to get it out. And a lot of that has to do with, okay, the defensemen are going to lob it out or just make the safe play. And then their forwards are so good.
Yeah.
And when it comes to the Canadians, guys like Pacioretty.
The Canadians have some speed. They can win those battles.
Yeah, they can win those battles. They're going to get the puck. So, but, yeah, you're not exiting with control. It's not the A1 breakout. But if you have the personnel to make it work and it's your best option, then, you know, go for it.
Yeah, but we'll see. Look, I personally think they're solidly in the playoffs. But that's just me. We'll see. Playoffs? Yay, nay?
You know what? I feel better about their playoff chances now than I did before we had this conversation. Just seeing how things went last year, even though they had a very...
When it goes bad with this team, it goes really bad.
Because even though they had really key injuries and, you know, having Price and all of them healthy is a huge... I mean, it's like... It's night and day, the difference in the team, but it's just hard to watch a team do what they did last season and say that I'm confident that they'll be in the playoffs.
That's fair.
As long as they have Carey Price and they get consistent production from their second line, then I think they will make the playoffs. But one, Price does have to play a full season, which, you know, he can.
Yeah.
He's not necessarily made of glass. He's very athletic.
He's been hurt enough times now where it's starting to be a concern, even a couple of years ago in the playoffs against the Rangers. But I think they have upgraded in terms of their backup goaltender. I think Al Montoya is a clear upgrade over Mike Condon and Ben Scrivens.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And I think Al Montoya is actually pretty good. So
yeah.
Anyway, I'm gonna stick up for my team here and say they make the playoffs. But let's move on up.
Detroit.
The Detroit Red Wings. My old co-host, Brian Yates, Detroit Red Wings, from our NHL on the Ice radio show. Look, the Red Wings are an interesting team. But I'm going to let Joe have the floor here. Sell the world on the Detroit Red Wings.
Well, first off, the first thing that's sticking out to me is they're almost $5 million over the cap projected. But I think that's because of Jan Franzen. They have to put him on
LTIR.
Yeah, which, you know, his contract wouldn't count against the cap hit. But I mean, Detroit's a team that's... They in the past few years, they've had, you know, good young talent come up, but they're still trending downward each year. You know, each year it seems... it takes them even longer and longer to clinch that playoff spot. And this year, I think that trend just keeps continuing. Because, you know, even though they added some guys like Franz Nielsen...
Vanek.
Yeah, they added Thomas Vanek. Okay, that's not making my point. they're sort of staving off a total rebuild.
Well, I think they're clinging on to that playoff streak.
Yeah, they are.
Although they won't admit it. Is it next year? It is next year where they have their new arena, right?
This coming year? Oh, man.
They're moving out of the Joe Louis.
That's right.
It's this coming year, right? Like this season?
I think so. Last season was the last year in the Joe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're right about that.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. And I mean, we got to mention Dylan Larkin.
Yeah.
Who is very fast. Won the NHL's fastest skater competition, for whatever that's worth, at the All-Star game. And in net, I think that although there are a lot of criticisms, and rightfully so, of Jimmy Howard, I think what they can cobble together with him and Peter Mrazek is going to be good enough to maybe potentially making the difference for them. But I'm going to say this about the Detroit Red Wings. I'm actually starting to lean more towards the opinion that Jeff Blashill is a pretty good coach, but that blue line, I just like Brendan Smith, Danny DeKeyser, who they gave a ridiculous contract to. Like, I don't know how you can be confident in that blue line.
The corpse of Mike Green and
Mike Nick Green Cromwell. Might actually be better than one. Nick Cromwell is actually bad now, but Mike Green's actually still decent.
It's just he's a corpse compared to 30-goal Mike Green.
I just feel like to sort of channel Joe's 3/3 lines comment, I feel like they have like like two second
two second pairings
and then like a fourth pairing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I've been saying this about Jonathan Erickson for years now. If you're a fan of any other team than the Red Wings, you should be very happy that the Red Wings have Jonathan Erickson.
Yeah. Yeah, but again, like, I think that talent up front that they have, you know, Tomas Yurko could be a guy that breaks out this year. Tomas Tatar, Mr. I can't stop scoring in the World Cup. Yeah.
And this website that we're looking at, Daily Faceoff, isn't even listing Andreas Athanasiou.
Yeah, Andreas Athanasiou. So look, they have a lot of promise. I feel like they're really like a what-if team. You know, like if their guys up front can take that next step, which they will, if that can overcompensate for their blue line, if their goaltenders can play well enough, they have, I mean, I think they're solid in the playoffs, but I feel like some of those things are like, can really go one way or the other, especially in net. And I just think the blue line's going to stink.
And how injury prone they have been the past few years.
Yeah.
They have really good talent sprinkled around the lineup, but it's just, it's not consistent
and
enough.
That's why, to me, and we've mentioned them after Montreal, but I can't put them past Montreal because I just feel like Montreal, and look, I am biased, like I'll admit it, but I feel like Montreal is just more well-rounded. Like, yeah. They don't have as many holes.
Yeah, I agree. And that's the word that I was looking for, is there's just more holes with Detroit because you have...
I mean, you just can't expect to be very good when you have, like, a terrible blue line.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Exactly. Like, yeah, you know, the cliche that defense wins championships is maybe that a cliche, but you need more than what they have.
You need quality players on defense to be relevant. It'll be interesting to see. I think, like, again, a lot of these teams we've discussed, I feel like it's sort of been the same story with all these Eastern teams, is they're going to be in the playoff hunt, and it's probably going to be the last 2 weeks of the season. Every game's going to be a 4-point game or whatever.
Right. So,
but we'll see.
With our tiers, when you for the middle class, with the upper and the lower, like we said, that's a big middle class.
It's so interchangeable.
And yeah, you know, the teams we have more confidence in, we're still not that confident about.
Yeah, like Boston could be better than Montreal. Like Ottawa might surpass the Islanders. Like it's such a mix. But right now, these are the teams that I have the most confidence in.
Yeah.
All right, let's move ahead. Final thoughts on the Red Wings, at least for me. If I had to put my money on it, I would say they don't make the playoffs.
Agreed.
But I think my more lukewarm approach would be, I think they're going to be in the hunt till the very end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have good, exciting talent sprinkled around. It's just that they don't have a very complete team.
But in the East, exciting talent, like, it actually gets you further than in the West.
It does.
In the West, you need like a roster to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move to, finally, the last team of the middle class and subsequently the upper middle class, the Florida Panthers. The Panthers of Sunrise, Florida. I actually like the Florida Panthers, and I especially like what they did this offseason, bring in Keith Yandle and Jason Demers to very reasonable contracts.
Yeah, and I mean, that blue line is looking good now. It's headed by Aaron Ekblad, who we'll get to see without Brian Campbell, and I'm not worried.
He'll be fine.
He'll be just fine. But having Yandle, Ekblad, even Jason Demers, that's a solid puck-moving group right there.
Yeah, and like Ekblad doesn't mind, like, you know, giving out the face washes or the couple fists flying here and there, so he's going to sort of clean up that net front. And then, you know, as far as their forwards go, look, Jaromir Jagr continues to be an ageless wonder. And I think he's going to have another good season.
I was literally about to say, they have a good group of young forwards that you mentioned, Jagr.
Yeah, and then they have Grandpa.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, Sasha Barkov, I think he's one of the best, one of the premier centers in the NHL. A guy like Vincent Trocheck. Don't overlook Nick Bjugstad. I think he's a very good shooter. His dad is actually a shooting coach.
Really?
If you don't know. Yeah.
Really?
Is that Barkov's nickname? Sasha?
Yeah.
Sasha is short for Alex.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in Russian. But yeah. And then Nick Bjugstad, I think he's a quality player.
How'd you know that about his dad?
Well, because, so, fun fact, if you look up the, like, the marketing ads or, like, videos for one of the latest Easton sticks, it might have been the Mako a couple years ago. His dad was like one of the testimonials, and he's like coaching a kid. Anyway, check that out. Yeah.
Man, more inside information.
You're listening to the Garage Hockey Podcast.
Yes. All that's going to be the tagline.
Yeah, I like Trocheck. There's a guy, Jonathan Huberdeau. Let's not forget to mention him.
Man, a lot of these guys were at the World Cup.
Yeah, and then the guy they got from Boston.
Riley Smith.
I think he's pretty good, too. So, look, like, I think... And then Annette, another ageless wonder, Roberto Luongo.
Strombone
1. Still not verified.
still not verified, but you know what? That's kind of part of his charm.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, Roberto Luongo has, for the last few years, had a Twitter handle, Strombone 1.
Very amusing Twitter.
With a goalie silhouette with a question mark on it as the, as the Twitter pick. So yeah, he's funny, like, good follow.
Definitely recommend it.
Go follow him now. I mean, he doesn't need our endorsement, but why not?
Everyone's marketing, and I'm not just talking about NHL, I'm talking about all marketing people need to take notes.
Should pay attention. Yeah. I think the Florida Panthers are the best team of the teams we've described.
And then, you know, another good signing, James Reimer.
And I think that we sort of alluded to this in
Toronto
in some of our first few podcasts. Could be an interesting play come next summer with the expansion draft, which goalie they're going to protect, because you can only protect one goalie. And I think that Reimer might have been a bit of insurance for the I think they're sort of looking ahead, and they're going to get out of Luongo's contract.
Yeah, it was a move for the long run, or the...
Yeah, it was a very shrewd transaction.
Because otherwise it wouldn't have made that much sense, because James Reimer can be a starter right now.
Yeah, and I think Gerard Gallant, their head coach, is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
So, like, there are very few question marks for me with this team. I think the loss of Brian Campbell is actually going to turn out to be a factor, but if you look at the additions of Yandel and Demers, I think that's going to mitigate it quite well.
Yeah, it's going to soften the blow for sure.
Yeah. So, Panthers, playoffs?
Yeah,
playoffs. We good? All right, guys. I want to congratulate you guys. We finally made it out of the middle class. We are in the last tier, which I'd like to call, on the big board, the 1% of the Eastern Conference. Mathematically, that's actually not true. They're not 1% of the total. But there are no other teams that really come close to what these teams are going to provide this season and into the playoffs. Starting with the Washington Capitals.
I think we should just work backwards in our analysis. Are they going to make the playoffs? Yes.
Yes, they're going to make the playoffs.
All right, now that's out of the way.
We're going to get to this later. They might not win their division, but they're once again going to have the best power play in the league, or one of the very best. They're led by one of the best coaches in the NHL, Barry Trotz. Won the Jack Adams last season, so you could argue he's the best coach. I think their blue line is going to be pretty good. Matt Niskanen, John Carlson. They're going to have Braden Holtby in net, who's once again going to be very good. Depth up front, Andrei Burakovsky comes to mind. Evgeny Kuznetsov might take another step forward. This team is so loaded with skill that it's impossible to not see them being in that conference final picture yet again.
Yeah, exactly. The only concern that I have about them is, even though they have a decent to good defense, I think it leaves a little bit to be desired.
Yeah, they don't really have that one sort of like top-notch blue liner.
Right. Like, Matt Niskanen is good.
Yeah, but I think he might not be as good as John Carlson. Like, who knows? Yeah. You know, it's just not clear-cut.
Exactly. And John Carlson, you know, I have even more love for him. But when you think about what's going on after those two,
I like Dmitry Orlov.
Orlov is decent.
And he looked good in the World Cup.
Yeah, and Carl Alsner is good.
Yeah.
You know, but we talked about it.
Schmidt.
We talked about it last year, or last season, when we were trying to decide who was going to win between Pittsburgh and Washington. And I hadn't really thought about it so much, because you just get mesmerized by Washington's forwards. But we came down to it, and it was like, man, what's going to tip the scales here? And Felix, you and I were saying it's probably going to be defense. And you said, Pittsburgh's is easily better than Washington's defense. And I think it makes a difference.
Yeah, but I mean, I feel like sometimes, because Washington they've never even made the conference final in the Alex Ovechkin era.
Which is still sort of baffling.
Which is baffling, but look, I mean, the second round series against the Pittsburgh Penguins went to a game 7, And
could have gone either way.
Could have gone either way. You could argue Pittsburgh was the better team all along, but in a short series, like, anything can happen. So I don't see a reason why they couldn't make the Eastern Conference Final, even with the question marks on the blue line. I think Holtby sort of fizzled out last season. I think maybe the workload got to him. Whatever it was, I don't think he was his best when it mattered most.
He's played a lot of hockey in the past 2 years.
Yeah, and I think they're going to have to find a way to stagger out his minutes a little bit more, maybe give Philip Grubauer a little bit more love.
Yeah.
But if they can do that, like, if they can keep Holtby rested for the playoffs, I think that's going to be sort of maybe the last ingredient to finally making the conference final. And I think I'd love to see that. I mean, look, Alex Ovechkin, it'd be nice to see him with that Stanley Cup final patch on his jersey for the first time.
Yeah, and just see what he can do in that final round.
Yeah, because Crosby's got his cup, so, like, let's see Ovi do it.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, they're going to be contenders, no doubt. I know that there's been sort of talk, you know, in some circles about how they rely on the power play. I think that sells them short. Like, they're a very good even strength team.
All yeah.
Right. So, contenders, yes. Surefire Stanley Cup final participants, maybe. Moving on up the ladder to the Tampa Bay Lightning. I mean, man, this could be the best team in the Eastern Conference.
What's not to like?
I mean, starting with, I mean, I don't even know who their best player is, to be honest.
I mean, there's Stamkos, Kucherov, Hedman,
Johnson.
It's like take your pick.
You didn't even mention Andre Palat and, like, you know, you said Victor Hedman, but Jonathan Drouin. Yeah. Anton Strahlman, and then in net they're stacked with Andrei Vasilevsky and Ben Bishop, a great head coach. So, man, like, I think they're the deepest team in the conference.
Yeah. And then no matter what happens with the goaltender, they're in good hands either way, cuz those two are both excellent.
Yeah. I would be shocked if this team didn't win the Atlantic Division.
Yeah. You just trust Yzerman and John Cooper.
Yeah.
To make the right decisions up front.
Yeah. So, and they've shown that they can be patient. They got Stamkos and Hedman at really great discount rates. This team is going to be there. They're going to be in the Eastern Conference Final yet again. That's my prediction. And look, once again, it was a Game 7 for the Penguins in the Eastern Conference Final. And actually, I think one thing people forget is that Tampa Bay was up 3-2 on the Penguins in the Eastern Conference Final. So, I mean, they had two cracks at closing it out, and they just couldn't do it. I think... They could potentially do it again. It's funny how, like, everyone now is talking about how great the Pittsburgh Penguins were, and rightfully so. But, I mean, it could have very easily been Tampa Bay lifting that Stanley Cup.
Yeah, one win away.
They got Stamkos back just in time for Game 7.
And, you know, we'll see what they do in the playoffs this year, assuming that they're relatively healthy. Because, you know, they made it to the finals 2 years ago. They made it to the conference finals, and, like you said, were up on the Penguins. And, you know, those are two... Not demoralizing, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's a tough pill to swallow.
In hockey, in, like, sports moniker, they're character building. God, I hate moments. Myself.
It's deflating.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll see how they respond to, you know, those kinds of losses, and if they're a better team for them.
Yeah.
Because like you said, the most well-rounded roster in the Eastern Conference.
Well, you know what's funny? I think that in sports sometimes, a really good team doesn't do well, that's when sort of the narratives are injected about their character and this and that. And, like, I don't think you're doing that, but, like, that's what we've seen around really good teams. Look no further than the Pittsburgh Penguins and how their leadership has been questioned. But I think they're at that point now where they're going to make it back to the conference final almost by default. Mm-hmm. Like, so long as they don't run into a hot goaltender or just sort of weird shit happens, they're going to make it back because they're just such a fundamentally sound team top to bottom.
And even if they did run into a hot goaltender or,
like, they can overcome that.
Yeah, they're so talented.
I mean, that's what happened 2 years ago. They played the Canadiens in the second round, and the Canadiens forced it to a game 6. They were down 3-1 or something like that, or 3-0, I forget. But they were still able to defeat Carey Price in his MVP season. So I just think if they can take down a historically great goaltender in his historically great season, I don't know what can really stop this team other than, like, bad luck.
Yeah. Yeah. It just feels like Johnson and Kucherov can only score every time the puck is on their stick in the playoffs. Like, they just don't stop scoring goals in the playoffs.
Yeah, and Andre Palat. And I think a full season of Drouin is going to make a ton of a difference.
Yeah.
And, you know, Stamkos, I don't want to say he's fizzling, but we haven't really seen a dominant Steven Stamkos in a couple of years now.
He's definitely in win-now mode.
Yeah, and I think that...
Sorry, Toronto.
I think he's really been distracted like by the whole contract thing. I think that was really sort of a weight on his shoulders, and I think that now that he's got his long-term deal, he knows he's going to be in Tampa Bay for the rest of his career, at least that's what we think. I think he's just going to be able to plan out. And like, you know, that's a bit of conjecture by me, but I feel like it's reasonable to think that.
He's going to be able to just do him.
Yes, you do you, Steven Stamkos. Look, Tampa Bay Lightning, surefire contenders. I see them in the Stanley Cup final yet again. They were in there 2 years ago.
I think the safe bet is I definitely see them in the conference final.
Because I think they have the easier road. Because they don't have a giant to topple on the road. Like, you know, they might have to, I mean, Florida's going to be a tough out. Montreal's going to be tough. Even a Boston or Ottawa could sort of, you know, ruffle their feathers in the first round. But I don't know. I just think they're such a well-oiled machine at this point. All right. Let's get to the well-oiled machine of the Eastern Conference. The reigning Stanley Cup champions, the Pittsburgh Penguins, led by the guys who've been there for over a decade now. Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Marc-Andre Fleury is still there somehow.
Chris Letang.
And then they have, and now more than ever, they have a great supporting cast. And I mean, it's almost an insult to call them a supporting cast, but Phil Kessel, Carl Hagelin, Nick Bonino. I mean, this team is just so impressive, led by an excellent head coach in Mike Sullivan. I don't see why the Pittsburgh Penguins can't repeat as Stanley Cup champions, especially with a full season of Mike Sullivan.
Yeah, exactly. I say it all the time, but I've never seen a team that fast.
Yeah.
Never.
But what's going to be interesting is, can they sustain that for 82 games, and is that going to wear on them come the playoffs? Like, we'll see.
Because they always seem to... injuries don't do them... injuries don't serve them, but they always seem to have rough patches in their season, and it's more than just... You know, it's a little bit of, you know, oh no, the Penguins are losing. They haven't won in a week or whatever. And, you know, NBC and TSN, I like to.
It all blows up. Yeah.
But, you know, they do seem to have, you know, down. They have slumps in their season where, you know, the puck just isn't going in the net, or they're losing a lot of games because the puck is going into their net.
Yeah.
And regular season, there's always some question mark, but. It's always, you know, you look at the roster they have, and they're making the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. Like, you know? this to me, I mean, I'm putting them at the top right now just because they're the reigning champs, but they might not be the deepest team, per se, but I think what we saw in the playoffs is the fact that on any given night, they can put out Phil Kessel, Evgeny Malkin, and Sidney Crosby onto three different lines. I mean, that's a nightmare for any other team. You just can't contain that.
Yeah, how do you match up?
I mean, I may have said this in an earlier podcast, but like, if you look at, you know, if they wanted to, they could put Crosby, Malkin, and Kessel out there all at once, and that's not just an all-star lineup. That is an all-world lineup.
Yeah. Well, Phil Kessel doesn't play for Team USA, but yeah. But anyway.
I'm going to go throw up.
Much-needed Team USA jab. But yeah, I mean, I want to see Pittsburgh do it again because I love Crosby, and, you know, but he's had his turn now, so it would be cool to see someone else do it. I think what's going to be really interesting for this team, though, is what are we going to see from Matt Murray this season? I think he had a good World Cup. I'm not going to say great, but I think for the most part he looked fine, and he looked great throughout the Stanley Cup playoffs. What are we going to see from a full season of Matt Murray? That's going to be interesting.
And when is he supposed to be back? I'm trying to remember.
I don't know. But, like, the thing is, this team is so good. I say this a lot about really good teams, but, like, their goaltending isn't that important. As long as he's not bad, that's all that really matters.
Yeah, and in the meantime, Marc-Andre Fleury is there.
Yeah, and he's fine.
Yeah, he's great in the regular season.
Yeah.
So
that's the Eastern Conference,
that's
guys.
That's the Eastern Conference.
We made it through the impoverished class, the gargantuan middle class, and the 1%. It's a small 1%. That's a weird thing to say.
I think it's reflective of us. You know, we started from the bottom,
and now we're here.
We just worked our way up through the middle class and kept gaining and gaining, and now look at us.
Yeah, but
we're shining stars.
I'm just very excited because I think this is finally it for any previews. Like, you know, thanks to everyone who's been listening to our podcast since we've started. This is now our 16th episode. And for the most part, we've been in preview mode. Here and there, we've been able to sort of dissect World Cup games. But the next time you'll listen to us, NHL regular season NHL games, I think, will be being played. I think that the season will have started, and we'll finally be able to talk about new stuff.
New things.
I think it's necessary for any respectable podcast to put out a preview, but we're going to be past that soon.
We're ready for it. I cannot wait.
But yeah, it's been a good preview, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, I applaud your efforts in talking about teams like the New Jersey Devils and, you know, the Columbus Blue Jackets. Like, that takes gumption.
It took a lot of heart, but we're full of character,
yeah,
guys.
A lot of grit on this podcast.
We go to the corners and we grind it out and we talk about the teams.
By the way, the San Francisco Giants.
The Giants, baby.
I'm firmly on the bandwagon.
Shout out to Mad Bum and Connor Gillespie.
I don't know if anyone saw my tweet tonight, but it was so gratifying seeing them win that wild card game as someone who watched every spring training game. I can't even finish.
Oh, man, you poor baby. Sitting through.
I think I watched three games this season.
Sitting through no games.
Yeah. Just enough to break out your San Jose Giants hat right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I'm rocking an SJ Giants hat, you know, pretty dope lid.
Yeah.
Gotta say.
Making everyone think that it runs deep.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm trying to pass off as like the low key fan.
Yeah.
But yeah, Giants, baby. Believe in.
Yo, I've said it to you guys. I said it on Twitter in 2014 when the Giants won for the third time. I would trust Madison Bumgarner.
Another one.
I would trust Madison Bumgarner with my life and all my money. He is so clutch.
Why are you asking me all the hard questions? But yeah, and you know, the Giants look good. The Golden State Warriors have hit the hardwood. They like just torched the Clippers last night. I enjoyed that
quite a bit. I saw you tweeting about it. And
I just couldn't contain myself.
You were so happy.
I erased a tweet in response to you just going, basketball! And I was going to just reply, meh.
Dude. I mean, it's never been seen, the amount of talent they've put together.
Yeah.
Like, all disrespect to the old school Lakers teams.
Oh, yeah, like, the basketball is getting very close to needing trust busters.
Yeah, well, I mean, so many things had to break right for the Warriors to like, amass this roster, so, yeah.
How could they not
74 and 8, baby. We're going for it.
Hey, Draymond doesn't want it, but they could do it.
Yeah. And hey, it's a good time for Bay Area sports. The Warriors are gonna do great. The Giants are in the postseason mix. The Sharks, we have them at the top of our big board, and the San Francisco 49ers are 15th in points per game.
So they are exactly average.
I mean, okay, I'm gonna say this to be 15th in points per game, having the worst quarterback in the NFL, it's pretty damn impressive.
It's
believe in Blaine, but don't.
It's actually unbelievable.
Yeah,
a word that gets tossed around entirely too much in sports, but it is
unbelievable.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm. Oh, and for those, well, I guess by the time this is up, it'll already happen. But I'm going to the Niners game tomorrow.
You're going to the game.
Yeah, catch me in the nosebleeds.
What's your prediction?
My prediction. Ooh.
What's the outcome?
The NFL pick'em.
No Carson Palmer, out with a concussion. Yeah,
I think the Niners win tomorrow. 28-14.
Woo! Look at that, man.
No, 24-17.
24-17.
Yeah. All right. Or, I mean, 28-17. Yeah. I don't know why I said 24, but yeah. 28-17 is my prediction.
You were just covering all your bases.
Yeah.
It was a spread.
But yeah, Niners, baby.
Niners.
Believe. I know we're 1-3, but I think 2-3 is in the cards.
Yeah, and you know what? In that division, if...
The NFC kind of sucks a lot.
Yeah. If LA comes back to earth and maybe their defense can't cover up the fact that
they're they not have that a terrible offense.
Yeah.
They're not starting the number one overall pick in the NFL draft.
Exactly.
What kind of crap is that?
Man.
I'm really deep right now in the NFL, mostly because of fantasy football.
You know what? It's my first season playing fantasy football. I'm thoroughly in it.
Yeah.
I think that maybe part of the reason that I like it so much is because I'm the only undefeated team left in my league.
All right.
All right. You know what?
All right.
You know what? I mean, hey, you know what?
Joe, what's your record?
Yeah, Joe, what is your record?
What are you? Are you? Do you have a win, first and foremost?
I do have a win.
Oh, you're 1-3?
Don't worry about it.
You're 1-3. It's okay. I'm 1-3 in one of my leagues, too.
Yeah, you can admit it.
But I'm better than you.
All 1-3s matter.
All 1-3s matter, but they're just not as good as 4-0s. You feel me?
Yeah. Well, anyway, a lot of sports going on.
Sports.
This is the good time of year for
October is sports month.
Yeah. Oh man, it's what a time to be alive.
It's a great time to be alive. Just a good time to be a sports fan.
Yeah. All right, boys. Great pod, and to everybody that's listening, we'll catch you on the other side. The regular season, it's upon us, baby.
It's upon us, guys. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Garage Hockey Podcast. You can find us on Stitcher and iTunes. You can interact with us on Twitter. Tweet us at Garage Hockey Pod. We'll surely be doing more listener questions very soon.
Oh, yeah.
So hit us up there. Until then, guys, we'll see you when the puck drops.